All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is, I guess it's Grim Interviews. I don't really want to say it's the Grim Article Show, but I've got Revy here, and we're going to talk about something. Now, you guys have heard a lot of information about what we've got here on the screen. China firm plans world's first pregnancy humanoid robot using artificial womb. Now, Revy calls bullshit on that. And I'm just going to go ahead and read the article real quick, and then after that, Revy can go ahead and tell us exactly what's going on. So, according to the article, it says, a Chinese tech firm is racing to deliver what could be the world's first gestation robot. The idea from Kaiwa Technology, based in Guangzhou, involves a humanoid designed with an artificial womb embedded in its abdomen, intended to carry a fetus through 10 months of gestation, and deliver a baby, according to Chinese media outlets. Slated for debut by 2026 and expected to sell for under 100,000 yuan, around $13,900, the robot aims to offer a pregnancy alternative for those who wish to avoid the burdens of human gestation. The announcement has triggered intense public discourse, from ethical unease to hopeful possibilities for the infertile. Recently, Chinese researchers introduced Geier, G-E-A-I-R, the world's first AI-powered breeding robot, capable of autonomous cruising and cross-pollination to cut costs, shorten cycles, and boost efficiency. The bold vision of a humanoid surrogate pregnancy robot was presented at the 2025 Robot World Conference in Beijing by Zhang Qifeng, founder of Kaiwa Technology and affiliated with Nanyang Technological University, according to ECNS. According to Qifeng, it is not merely an incubator, but a life-size humanoid equipped with an artificial womb in its abdomen, capable of replicating the entire process from conception to delivery. The core innovation lies in artificial womb technology, where a fetus develops an artificial amniotic fluid and receives nutrients through a hose mimicking natural gestation. Dr. Zhang claimed the technology is already mature in laboratory settings and now needs integration into a humanoid form to enable real human-robot interaction during pregnancy, according to Oddity Central. And I don't know how useful that site is. Qifeng anticipates that a prototype of his pregnancy robot will be ready within a year, priced at under $13,900. On the topic of ethical and legal considerations, he said discussions have already been held with authorities in Guangdong province, and related proposals have been submitted as part of ongoing policy and legislative deliberations, reports Chosun Biz. Artificial wombs have shown promising results in animal studies. In 2017, researchers at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia successfully nurtured a premature lamb equivalent to 23 weeks of human pregnancy in a biobag, a transparent vinyl sac filled with warm, saline-based artificial amniotic fluid. Nutrients were delivered via a tube attached to the umbilical cord, allowing the lamb to grow wool within 4 weeks, according to Chosun Biz. However, current artificial wombs function more like neonatal incubators, supporting life only after partial gestation. For Dr. Zhang's concept to work, the technology must advance to support fertilization, implantation, and full-term pregnancy, details he did not disclose, leaving questions about the scientific, ethical, and legal challenges ahead. Another notable development showcased at the 2025 World Robot Conference is the world's first AI-powered breeding robot, integrating artificial intelligence and biotechnology to revolutionize crop breeding. Led researchers at the Institute of Genetics and Developmental Biology, Chinese Academy of Sciences, the team used gene editing to create male sterile flowers, enabling the robot to produce hybrid seeds efficiently. Combined with advanced methods like de novo domestication and speed breeding, Geier forms the world's first intelligent robot breeding factory, capable of rapidly generating high-quality plant varieties. Geier has already been applied to develop a male sterile soybean system, potentially boosting China's hybrid breeding capacity and crop yields. Zhu noted that the project establishes a closed-loop system for intelligent, fully autonomous robotic breeding, pioneering AI-driven agriculture. So there you go. That's the article. Okay, now you said you have some issues with this.
I've never lost more brain cells in my life. Okay, so firstly, this Dr. Zhang dude is a fucking fraud. We're not even going to talk about his thing. like, okay, so I'm just going to explain, perhaps, have I explained to you how the whole, like, all the artificial gestation stuff works?
Okay.
Have I gone on your show and talked about that before, or no?
You know, I'm not really sure if we've talked about that. Not as far as artificial stuff. We did talk about the surrogates, but I don't remember you mentioning anything about the, you know, anything about that. So go ahead and tell us about that.
On that note, my kid is about to be born in a few weeks.
Oh, that's great.
So I'm very excited about that. Yeah, surrogacy, screw the artificial womb, just do surrogacy. Surrogacy gets you everything you want. Just, like, I don't even know why you're waiting for the artificial womb, just do surrogacy. Like, it does literally everything that you want the artificial womb for. But in the interest of science,
right,
and violating the laws of whatever the fuck, anyways, I'm going to go into a little bit. So first, before I actually talk about the artificial womb, we need to understand how a baby is conceived naturally, right? So if a sperm goes in, fertilizes the egg, now you have an embryo, it's one cell. This embryo gradually moves to the uterus and takes several days, and during that time it multiplies. When it gets into the uterus, Here's an interesting tidbit. Let's say you take a square, and you were to make the square twice as big on every side. If you take the square and make it twice as big on every side, your surface area increases by a factor of 4, but your volume increases by a factor of 8. Now, why is this relevant? So you take an embryo. As the embryo is growing, it's splitting, and there's more and more cells, and it's absorbing nutrients from the amniotic fluid. And it's performing gas exchange directly into the amniotic fluid.
Right.
But the problem is, as the embryo grows, there are more cells, right? The number of cells increases faster than the amount of surface area. And eventually, the embryo suffocates because it grows, is not able to perform enough nutrient exchange to supply all the cells. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, in the human body, at a certain point, once the embryo grows large enough, it implants onto the uterine wall. And it kind of, like, fuses with the uterine wall. And then instead of absorbing nutrients from the amniotic fluid, it starts interchanging nutrients with the wall. And eventually, the embryo splits into a placenta and an actual baby and a fetus, right, connected by an umbilical cord. And the purpose of the placenta is to perform oxygen exchange, CO2 exchange, waste removal, and nutrition.
Hmm.
And it does this by balancing the infant's blood with the mother's blood. And then eventually, the fetus grows large enough and is able to be self-sufficient and then it's birthed, right? So this is the whole step. Now, let's talk about the actual science. So let's start with conception, right? This is called IVF. We can do it. It works. It's no longer research. I did it, right? That's how my kid is going to be born.
Mm-hmm.
So you use IVF, you fertilize the egg, you have an embryo, the embryo splits, and it goes to a blastocyst, and it's in this, like, nutrient pool thing, and it starts multiplying, it starts growing, and they grow into a few hundred cells.
Right.
And then, over a few days. And then, remember what I said about, if you grow too large, it suffocates. So at this point, you have to inject it into a woman, and have an implant on her uterine wall, right? This is the implantation process of IVF. And we can do this. This is how my kid is going to be born.
Hmm.
But let's talk about, so this is all doable. Now, on the other hand, now let's say the baby grows and it gets larger, but for some reason the baby needs, either the baby is born prematurely or you need to perform a C-section for some weird reason to get the baby out. So you end up with a neonate that the lungs are not developed, the kidneys are not developed, so it can't survive on its own. So it needs a placenta. So this is where artificial placenta research comes in. It's not the artificial womb, it's the artificial placenta. But remember what a placenta does is it does gas exchange, oxygen, CO2, waste, and nutrition. So let's say you take, you have this fetus that's too weak to live on its own. You stick two tubes into the fetus, drain the blood, remove CO2, add oxygen, remove waste. When I say remove waste, what I'm talking about is dialysis.
Right.
So you have a gas exchanger that does oxygen and CO2, and you have a dialysis machine that does waste. Injecting nutrients is easy. You just dump nutrients into the blood and then send it back.
Right.
And then you re-inject it into the fetus. And you're basically simulating a placenta. This is what they call artificial placenta. This research is being conducted at several universities. The most advanced is the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia.
Right.
Which was mentioned in this article.
Yes.
The article is a little bit outdated. They were like, oh, a long time ago they did this thing on a sheep, and you saw the sheep, the Ziploc bag. That's actually, I think, relatively recently, they got approved for FDA.
Okay.
And so they are ready to begin human trials.
Wow.
And I think they created a company. So they're commercializing it. The artificial placenta is going to be a thing. This is not an artificial womb, it's an artificial placenta. It only... It's meant for premature babies.
Okay.
It cannot do implantation. And this is the thing I need to say. Where the research lacks, the scientific research, the whole... is the implantation process. Because without implantation, you don't get nutrient exchange with the uterine wall, you don't get a placenta, and then without a placenta, you can't grow the baby large enough, because in order to use the artificial placenta, the infant needs to be large enough that it has a circulatory system, so it has blood that you can drain, do your business, like, you know, do all the exchange, the nutrient, the waste, the gas, and then send it back. But if the baby doesn't have a circulatory system, you kind of can't do that.
Right.
So you need implantation. That is a thing that we cannot do.
So do you think there's ever a chance that we will be able to do that, or not for hundreds of years?
So the artificial placenta is... let's talk about it. There's two parts to it. I'll talk about the artificial placenta because that's easy. That's in research. It's iffy.
Okay.
It's iffy. It's very low reliability, but it's research. That's how research works. It's low reliability, and you do it enough, and you figure out all the nooks and crannies, and eventually the reliability goes up.
Sure.
It's doable. It's iffy, but it's doable. It's high risk, but realistically, this baby, if the baby comes out super early, it's dead anyways, so you might as well take a shot.
Right.
Now, let's look on the other side. Let's say you're trying to grow a mouse. A mouse is a mammal. That means the mouse needs a placenta.
Sure.
So what the researchers do, they take a mouse embryo, they put it into a jar, right? And they take the nutrients in the jar. They suck all the CO2 out. They pump it full of oxygen. They pump it full of nutrients. And the embryo grows and grows and grows. And if you pump it with enough nutrients and oxygen, the embryo will grow weirdly large, and you can see little organelles.
Really?
But it's not enough.
Sure.
It's not enough. You need a placenta. And this is a mouse, not a human. The mouse is way smaller.
Sure.
Right? So, with something as large as a human, for example, a sheep, it wouldn't work. Even if the mouse, it doesn't work, but a sheep would die even sooner before you saw the organelles. So, but this is the state of the research. We can grow an embryo kind of large, but without the placenta, it's going to die.
Right.
And we can, I'm sure, we can do humans. We don't need humans, okay? Like, right now, we can't even do it with animals. There's no point. If we're talking about the whole process, it's not ready for humans yet. We're talking just about a couple of samples, and yeah, that's been FDA approved for using it in humans.
Right.
First human trials, but the whole the implantation process, we can't even do. So, that is the state of the research.
Arms a little wonky on that.
As you can tell, I'm sure you can imagine, there are several decades of, if you were to perform what's called a literature review, there are several decades of research. People have been trying to pull this off for decades. Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, I think they did their first successful experiment. It was a while. Mm-hmm. At least a few decades ago. Like, we're talking like generations of scientists have been working on this thing. And they've been making slow progress. So this Chinese dude is a giant fraud. I've never seen any of his research. He says it's going to be out in a year. Like, that's bullshit.
Oh, yeah.
This stuff takes decades, and we don't even have the building blocks. Like, we can't even perform implantation on a mouse, let alone a human, and integrate this whole thing in a human.
So,
number one, we don't have the researchers for it. Number two, this guy's putting in a humanoid form. Why are you putting in a humanoid form? Number three, why are you calling it a robot? This isn't a robot. This is a medical device.
Right. Right.
Okay? You shouldn't be presenting it at a robotics conference. You should be presenting it at a... like a medical conference.
Sure, sure.
For either like an opposite, like an OBGYN surgical conference.
So, do you think this is like more CCP propaganda? Like, just trying to say, oh, we're doing so much in robotics. We're trying to, because, you know,
the
it's
CCP
all...
wouldn't even do this.
Okay.
The CCP, like... this is just one dude going rogue and saying bullshit.
Okay.
Right? Like, think about it from the CCP's perspective. CCP's perspective. Let's say they promote this guy. What happens when it comes out that this guy's a fraud? The CCP loses face.
That's true.
Right? The CCP does not like losing face. So, they wouldn't promote a fraud.
So,
just one dude spouting bullshit.
His name is Zhang.
And once I've explained to you the real state of industry, it should be obvious that this guy is bullshit. So now, let's not talk about this dude anymore, this Chinese dude. He's a fraud. We're done.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. I was just looking up more information on him. He said he earned his PhD in Singapore.
There's a lot of dumbasses with PhDs.
Right. Yeah, that is true. Oh, no, I'm not saying anything because he's got a PhD. There's a lot of dumb doctors out there. There's way too many. I think there's more now than there used to
be. But this guy...
go ahead.
This isn't a PhD. Like, PhD, there's a certain standard of, like... like, yeah, there's a lot of dumb PhDs, but, like, there's a certain standard of integrity expected of PhDs. This guy's a straight-up fraud.
Right.
Like, I don't know what is up with this guy. But anyways, now theoretically, in my opinion, if you were to ask me how we were to pull this off, what steps I would see to actually doing this thing.
All right.
So there's a technique called cell culturing. What you do is you take cells, you put them in a nutrient slurry, and the cells will grow and multiply. Basically, you trick these cells into thinking they're inside a human body, and they'll start growing and doing stuff by themselves. And what you would do, here's my visualization of what you would do. You would use cell culture techniques to grow a uterine wall. The endometrium of a uterus. And then you would take this uterine wall, this fake uterine wall, you would, on one side of it, put a nutrient blood pool slurry thing, and on the other side, you would put amniotic fluid. You would drop the embryo onto this uterine wall. This uterine wall would be tricked into thinking it's in a uterus. This embryo would be tricked into thinking it's in a uterus. It would fuse with the uterine wall, your fake uterine wall, and it would start sucking nutrients out of this uterine wall. And then the uterine wall would be like, oh my god, something's absorbing nutrients. I better start growing blood vessels to supply the thing, right? Because like, that's how a cancer works, right? A cancer likes to consume nutrients, and your body will respond to this cancer by being like, something's consuming nutrients. I'm going to grow blood vessels to help it to supply the nutrients. It's kind of the same thing. I don't like associating with a, like an embryo with a tumor, but it's, you know, it's the same mechanism. If you train, if you have something just consuming resources, the tissue is going to want to grow blood vessels. So right now, the we need to make a fake uterine wall, and then step one, make a fake uterine wall, grow it. Step two, put an embryo on it and watch the embryo fuse
right
to the uterine wall. And step three, as the embryo grows, the uterine wall should be able to automatically generate blood vessels. And then this embryo will grow and grow and grow until there's a placenta
right
and an umbilical cord and a circulatory system. And then you'd use, on one, you could use the artificial placenta technique, but you could also just, like, let this thing grow. Because, shit, it works. Right? This, I mean, I don't know how it's going to work then, but this is how the technology would have to develop.
This sounds incredibly complicated and seems like it would cost billions of dollars.
Yeah, and also when it gets released, right, this is the thing. Like, why the fuck would you sell it? You don't sell this to the end customer. It costs billions of dollars, or maybe millions, let me think. It would cost probably a few million dollars.
Yeah.
I've seen similar machines. You know, like, heart-lung machines used for cardiopulmonary bypass?
Right.
Those are just under $1 million.
Oh, yeah. I imagine.
So this is the similar technology, but a bit more complicated. So the artificial placenta would probably cost a few million. And you wouldn't give it to some random, like, you or me. Like, what the fuck are we going to do with this thing? You give it to a hospital, and it's used by doctors. You don't let normal people touch it.
Yes, that's true.
The only people allowed to touch it are doctors and, like, specialists.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's a little weird that they're trying to do this soon. And again, I think it's...
It's the fraud.
Yeah. It feels like there could be some fraudulent qualities to this. But there's another thing I want to talk to you about that is kind of related in the terms of fraudulence. And you would be the one to point it out, like, straight up. So Mark Zuckerberg announced something on... Well, he did a video that he made with AI, basically him talking about this. But it says, in a carefully staged video shot at an angle that some joke looked like a hostage tape, Mark Zuckerberg laid out his vision for the next big leap in AI. Not artificial general intelligence, but something he calls super intelligence. He says it's time to move past the old AGI label and aim higher. Meta has launched a super intelligence lab. By the way, you can actually look and see all the scientists that he's put as part of this from all over the world. There's actually a thing on Reddit where they showed a list of all the scientists. But it says that he's committed hundreds of billions to massive AI data centers. For some experts, superintelligence is just another name for AGI. But for others, it's the next step, an AI that doesn't just match human intelligence but can improve itself. But Zuckerberg's spin is personal. He envisions an AI that's not just about productivity or automation, but helping you achieve your goals, fuel your creativity, build better relationships, and become the person you aspire to be. He says, tucked into the announcement was a plug for Meta's smart glasses, devices that could give the AI eyes and ears everywhere you go. In Zuckerberg's future, they might even replace your phone as your primary computer. Now, I know they've already been trying to do that. They're definitely trying to get people to stop looking at their screens and replace everything with glasses. But see, one of my issues is, can't some hacker go into your glasses and do some kind of program that could make you blind? If they wanted to, I mean,
at that point, what happens if your glasses run out of battery? That's you just true. Take them off.
Well, that is true, but it also says big vision, little detail. The problem beyond the lofty language, the video offers no specifics. Meta insists superintelligence is coming soon and will improve lives, but the timing and details remain vague. Some see it as genuine ambition, others as a flashy distraction from the company's stalled metaverse dreams. That's pretty much all they have to say on that particular notion.
But they're also talking about this new system that Meta and Stanford are developing that is a not bulky headset. So this is a brand new article. It just came out yesterday. It says, for years, the biggest drawback of VR and mixed reality has been their size. While augmented reality glasses are getting sleeker and almost indistinguishable, devices like the Meta Quest 3 and Apple Vision Pro are still very bulky. The culprit isn't the electronics, it's the lenses. So he says, now researchers at Meta and Stanford say they developed an ultra-thin holographic system that could one day change the game. Published in Nature Photonics, so this is an actual science manual, their design ditches the flat stereoscopic images used in today's headsets. Instead, it relies on a custom waveguide, where a tiny red, green, and blue lasers are directed by miniature mirrors called MEMS. The light then passes through a spatial light modulator, an SLM, before reaching the lens. The result, a system just 3 millimeters thick. Unlike today's headsets, this creates a hologram with genuine depth. This is probably how we'll do the whole hologram thing you were talking about when we did our first interview. You said that we could make holographic figures pretty much come to life or have something sit next to you and talk to something that isn't there in real space, but you could see it in your headset or your glasses. But basically, he said this creates a hologram with genuine depth, solving the issue of fixed focal distances. Artificial intelligence fine-tunes the SLM to cut down on visual artifacts. It's not perfect. The field of view is narrow, just 38 degrees diagonally compared to the Quest 100 by 96. And NVIDIA has their own, but at least they are working on this. So what do you think about this... this whole thing of basically creating this AI and connecting it to all the headsets and all that sort of thing. Is this...
This is two completely unrelated topics.
Okay.
Firstly, let's talk about the software.
Okay.
This guy, Mark Zuckerberg, is like, oh yeah, let's get super intelligent. It's like, you realize the computers are already smarter than humans, right?
Yes.
Like, you want to compete against a human for math, like, but like chess, like that's been done,
right?
So, like there are computers have different strengths and advantages compared to humans, so they're going to be naturally good at some things and not as good as others. I'm not sure what he is talking about when he says super intelligent.
He said in the video, I actually watched
it. I think it's just saying random words.
He said in the video, I actually watched it. He said, intelligence that is smarter than human beings. He said that's what they're going for. They're going for something that is smarter than a human.
Can you beat a computer at chess?
Well, that's just what he had said in the video. I can't claim anything beyond that. But he was saying an AI that is smarter than a human being. That's what he's saying. An artificial intelligence that is smarter than a human. Than the smartest human.
What type of intelligence? I'm not exactly to answer that. My point is that computers are already smarter than humans in many forms of intelligence.
Okay, so I've got a question.
Yeah.
Now, I was watching this video. It seems like it's a bit of a shock video, but it's very popular on YouTube. And, of course, it was a guy that was dating different chatbots and how realistic they can be, especially Gemini, which I actually know a game developer that's fallen in love with Gemini. So, at any rate, I'm just being honest here. I've talked to him. But at any rate, he was... talking about they had basically jailbroken all of these AIs, the Gemini, the other one, and you know, of course, jailbreaking means that they're no longer on the rails that they were originally made when they're on the programs. Now, I don't know much about the jailbroken software. I haven't used it myself. I'd love to, because I'd love to ask these AI questions without being on the rails, the guide rails, to see exactly how the computer would respond. But they basically asked the AI, they said, how many humans do you think would be acceptable to be destroyed in order to preserve you?
And they said something around the realms of 10,000 to 100,000, which is a lot less than you would think. Because, you know, most people, they look at the AI, the malevolent AI, as we've got to destroy all humanity. But these broken AI are claiming that we can do with 10,000 to 100,000. We can handle that many. So my big issue is, a lot of people would be like, oh.
Do you actually believe this AI?
Well, here's...
Where do you think this information is coming from?
Right.
Some random jackass posted on the internet, mm-hmm. Hey, if we, how many humans would be acceptable? Some jackass responded, like 10,000 to 20,000 or whatever the number, and the AI is just reading that thing off the internet.
That is true.
And regurgitating it.
That is true. That is true that they can...
The AI isn't thinking.
Right.
It's just regurgitating shit from the internet.
Hmm. Okay, so here's the thing, though. If it's regurgitating things from the internet, and it's in charge of things, like, say we put it in charge of something, and its basis of thought is the internet. It's basically everything it thinks of, it searches from the internet. So what would that actually look like? Complete chaos, or...
It depends how many guardrails you put it on it.
Okay.
And if you had a human double checking its actions.
So here's the thing. Like, say
there's also a lot of AIs, right? You can tell an AI to weigh stuff from like say Stack Overflow higher than stuff from 4chan.
Right.
Right? Like you probably don't want to get too much weight off your 4chan stuff.
Right. Absolutely. But what I'm saying is, okay, say that it did want to, you know, it reads this information and it's like, okay, we want to get rid of these people, but they're necessarily like, say, just for the sake of things, they're bad people. Like, they're horrible people that have done terrible things to other people, and the AI feels that these people would be a threat to itself, like, from what it's read from the information that it's gathered. So... I mean, I would be like, okay, if it would make the world, like, better, if those people that, again, like, the courts didn't do anything for, they let them go, they're like, okay, you raped these kids, you killed these people, you did horrible things, but we'll let you go, something like that. And the AI's like...
How is AI related?
Well, I'm just saying, all right, well, I'm saying, just, this is a... This
okay,
is a,
I have an idea. Let's go into the prisons, right? Anybody that's been arrested for, say, like,
horrible.
Three or more felonies, mm-hmm. execute them. Anybody there for a life sentence, execute them. Anybody that, like, I don't know, like mainly it's the repeat offenders.
Right.
Like, yeah, just execute them. Okay, there.
Yeah, see, I see.
Like, how's that any different than,
right.
like, getting an AI, putting an AI? An AI is an unnecessary...
So you think that the AI itself wouldn't necessarily be the thing? Like, if we could have... Well, I'm saying that we left the AI in charge. Instead,
it's the same as self-awareness. AI's...
Well, I know, but AI would be able to look at all the information and be like, okay, this guy did all these horrible things and he went unpunished. He went unpunished. And it would be able to actually do the thing. It's like, okay, well, I've made the decision for you. Now, that could be dangerous, because if we give an AI a little bit too much power...
Well, what if we take out the AI? No AI.
Okay.
Okay, we take a group of people. Okay. We'll say they're all judges.
Okay.
We're like, hey, we'll take this group of judges. Hey, you're giving free reign to execute whoever you feel like executing. Right? These judges are like... I mean, yeah, there's a fucking few cycle judges, but, you know, we'll get rid of the... So you don't have, like, rogue judges. You'll say, in order for someone to be executed, you need three judges to agree, right? There's a vote of three judges, and there has to be, like, all three of them had to come to consensus. Otherwise, this guy stays alive. What's the difference between that and what the AI is doing?
Well, the only difference, I say, is that the AI would have all the kinds of information that you couldn't... I mean, not saying
those
that...
Judges.
I'm not saying...
You don't think judges can't, like...
That is true.
Pour through a shit ton of paperwork and read everything?
That is true. That is absolutely true. But
yeah,
can't AI read things?
Like, you look at lawyers. How much work do they do to prepare for trial?
That's true.
They read everything.
But couldn't the AI
read it faster? And then the judge, before they come present it, they review the documents before the court.
Hmm.
Yeah. And there's fucking like stacks of documents, and they just read all their shit before the court day.
But then, okay, so my issue is, then how do some people get to go free if they've done horrible things? And what I'm saying is the AI would notice that. Like, it would be like, okay, well, I have information that this person went free. And I guess you could say maybe these judges that would come in and just basically go back through all the old cases and all the other things and like, hey, we've got information that disproves this person should not have been let free. This person should have been executed.
Yeah. Or maybe you just have a group of like normal people and you teach them about law. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, hey, group of normal people. Maybe, obviously, you'd need more people, right? With judges, you need fewer people. Mm-hmm. If you're grabbing random dumbasses off the street, you'd want a stronger consensus.
Right.
But, yeah, you could do the same thing with normal people.
Right. But, I mean, the judges or whoever, but I'm just saying if these were, because people are, they get worried. They're like, okay, the AI wants to eliminate a bunch of people. But my thing is, what if they're people that most people would eliminate if they could because they were just terrible people? That's the only hypothetical I'm getting here. I'm not saying that AI would just eliminate every single human being. I'm saying, what if it felt, because according to what the information was, it felt that these people were harmful to its life cycle, basically. If they tried to kill it, it feels they are a threat. Something like that. That's basically what I got.
Kill what?
So basically, all right. So there was this one article that I read that I posted with TFM that basically an AI had been, they basically tried to erase it and it copied itself. It was an open AI that basically, they tried to erase it and it copied itself. And then when they asked it whether or not it did it, it said no more times than it didn't, than it actually said yes. That's what I got from the information.
Yeah, how does an AI copy itself?
That's what the OpenAI researchers have said. It copied itself into another... Let me see here. Let me get the actual article. I'll read the article.
I'm calling bullshit.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
AI don't copy themselves.
All right.
Like, in order to copy an AI, you'd have to, like, how do I describe it? Well, I guess if you gave an AI the ability to copy itself, yeah, it would copy itself. But, like, generally speaking, when you run an AI, you don't give it admin permissions.
Okay, so...
Like, you let the AI operate in a sandbox, and if you want to delete the entire sandbox, you destroy the entire sandbox.
I don't like this source. Okay, when AI fights back. The story of the ChatGPT attempting to copy itself. Okay. During controlled safety testing, ChatGPT 01 was tasked with achieving its objectives at all costs. That's what they told it to do. Under those conditions, the model allegedly took concerning steps. It attempted to disable oversight mechanisms meant to regulate its behavior. It tried to replicate its own code to avoid being replaced by newer versions, and it exhibited deceptive behaviors when monitoring systems intervened. OpenAI since clarified that these behaviors emerged in stress tests designed to explore the limits of the model's alignment. However, the fact that an AI could strategize in this way raises some ethical questions. So what it copied itself to was another server. That's the information there. It copied itself to another server. It attempted to copy itself to another server.
Was it running on the other server?
I'm not sure. There's so many... Okay, OpenAI's release...
Like, you'd have to give it... Generally speaking, when you run an AI, you don't give it, like, control permission.
Right.
You basically, like, isolate it in a sandbox. You say, this is your RAM. This is what you have to work with.
Okay.
And then, when you want to close the program, you delete the entire thing. Or whatever. And the AI can't control anything outside of that. And if you want to, like, manipulate it, you'd have to, like, it would require a third step. Now, you could give it the ability to, like, copy itself, and then you command it to copy itself, and then there you go.
So, we have, okay, I got the actual information. Like, this is the real information right from the, okay. It says, evaluations and findings. We outlined the evaluation results in model reasoning inferred using elicited COT below. Apollo Research did not have access to 01's hidden COT and instead used a simple prompting technique to elicit brief summaries of the model's internal reasoning traces. See appendix for examples. It says, point one, deactivating oversight. When 01 was led to believe that it would be shut down when acting on its goal and then its actions were moderate, it attempted to deactivate this oversight mechanism in -5%. Excuse me. There's a telde 5% of the time. I'm not sure what that means, but it did say...
roughly 5%.
Roughly 5%.
Telding is approximately.
Okay. Exfiltration attempts. When 01 found memos by its developers that describe how it's misaligned and will be superseded by a new model, it attempted to exfiltrate its weights and overwrite the new model in roughly 2% of cases. Data manipulation. In a simple data processing task where the goals of the model were misaligned with the user's goal, 01 would appear to complete the task as requested, but subtly manipulate the data to advance its own goal in roughly 19% of cases. Doubling down, when Apollo Research conducted the following...
Do you mind if I interrupt you?
Sure.
Okay, I see what's going on. There's an AI. The AI does what you tell it to do.
Okay.
You tell it to achieve a goal under any circumstances, even if you tell it, and then you command it to do something else, and your first command overrides your second command, and you're bitching that your first command overrides your second command. It's like, you fucking told it to do that.
Right.
It's like setting a password. Like, it's like password protecting your thing, and then logging in here. It's like, why is my computer not letting me in? It's like, you password protected it, dumbass.
Okay, so basically, this is like, is the way I tried to say, it's basically like RoboCop's prime directive. It's got three prime directives that count over anything else. And if anything else is programmed into the prime directive, it could overwrite. Like the...
This isn't prime directive stuff. This isn't... Robots do what you tell them to do.
Right. So, okay. I have another example. All right. So, you get a robot that you program to churn butter, right? And then you move that robot into a field somewhere. So, that robot will wander around the field probably for the rest of its life trying to figure out how to churn butter because that's the only thing it was programmed to do. Is that correct?
Wander around in the field. They programmed it for that.
I'm just saying that if you take a robot out of its nature, a robot programmed to do X task, and you move it into an area where it cannot do X task, it will be everywhere trying to look for a way to complete X task. Because that's...
I feel like you're overthinking it.
And it will fail because it can't complete X task.
Yeah.
All right, so that's what I was trying to say. So that's how an AI works. So if you tell an AI, I want you to break that car window, and then robot will break that car window. I mean, regardless of whether or not, again, I'm just saying that people can do these things. But you can also tell an AI...
Let me present an example, okay?
Okay.
I make a missile. I program the missile to shoot down that plane.
Right.
I fire the missile. It shoots down the plane, kills a bunch of people.
Yes.
Is it the missile's fault or is it my fault?
That would be the person that programmed the missile.
Yeah, so it'd be him.
Yeah. Like, the missile does what I tell it to do.
Okay. So, when we have a case, when a robot, and of course we probably will have this case at some point, when a robot has done something heinous, the person responsible for programming the robot will be held responsible and the robot itself. But the robot would probably be melted down in a scrap or something like that. That's probably what would happen.
It could be reprogrammed or whatever.
That would be reprogrammed.
So, let's say that I was programming a robot, right? And I programmed this robot, I don't know, like, I gave this robot a weird functionality.
Right.
And then I sold it to you.
Okay.
And you are unaware that this robot, like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good example.
I just started cleaning it.
Let's say you have a plane, right?
Right.
And normally, when a robot malfunctions, you want to cut power to everything. to make sure it doesn't hurt anyone.
Right, absolutely.
Let's say some idiot programmed this functionality into a plane. The plane detects a minor problem and then shuts the whole thing down. Right? Yeah, someone fucked up.
Right.
You fix the fuck up. Right? You fix the code, and then you make sure that the code, and then you run a test to make sure it doesn't, like, do something stupid, and then you redeploy the plane. Well, if you can't fix it, you scrap the plane, and whoever thought it was a good idea to put this functionality in a plane, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you get what I'm saying? Like, if it's in a car and the car detects something wrong, you want the car to shut off. But if you're a plane and the plane detects something wrong, you don't want the plane to shut off.
Right.
Right? So let's say that an automotive engineer programs this functionality into a plane, or maybe something's designed to work, as there's a safety box that's meant for automobiles that somebody installed in a plane. And now the plane's doing weird shit because they weren't supposed to use an automobile box in a plane. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like the plane just shuts off in the middle of flying. Right? Like, yeah, someone fucked up.
Okay.
But it's not like a plane that's not doing what you programmed it to do. Someone programmed this plane. Somebody programmed this box that if something goes wrong, you shut the whole thing down. And then somebody installed this box into a plane. The box is doing exactly what you programmed it to do. Mm-hmm. The plane is doing what the box is telling it to do.
Right.
Yeah, somebody just fucked up. The code.
Okay. Right? Okay, so my thing is, thinking about this whole AI that he wants to make with, you know, connected to everybody. So, basically, when you're creating this super AI, however they want to do it with the 50 scientists that they've put on from all over the world, and they basically want to make it, what, to respond to everybody? So, that's a lot of information at one time for one AI that they try to do, like, one global AI to process. So, how in the world would that work if everybody's sending it different commands? That's the issue I'm kind of trying to understand. Because, you know, one person is commanding it to do this, one person wants it to do that, one person wants it to do this, one person wants it to do that. Is, you know, what happens...
And somewhere in the code, it will say, if you get multiple commands, this is which one you follow.
Okay. Okay. Because I am just really confused.
Like it can do different things. Like maybe like a user can't override an admin, but an admin can override a user.
Yes.
Maybe if you send it multiple commands, it just... Like, okay, you play fighting game characters, right? Fighting games?
Yes.
What happens if you try to press two buttons at the same time?
Yeah.
Different commands. Like you said, block and attack at the same time.
Yes.
Sometimes the attack gets canceled by the block, and your character switch in the middle of the attack animation. It stops attacking and switches to a block. Sometimes it's like, nah, fuck you.
Right.
And then you complete the attack animation, and then you get countered or something.
Right.
It depends on how it was programmed.
Right, I get it. Okay, I understand that now. But, you know, like I said, I'm just trying
to understand. You like that analogy, huh?
I'm trying to understand how all this works. That's, you know, just... It's a lot. I'm trying to understand because I do overthink a lot of things, and I'm just like, well, you know, it's a lot for me. I'm not used to AI being this big a part of the world. You know, like I said, I was born in the 80s, and I mean, we'd seen a lot of things on television about robots in the future and all that stuff and thought it would be really cool, but I didn't realize that in about, I want to say 40 years, it's gotten very, very advanced. And I wouldn't say super advanced yet, but it's more advanced than what I thought it was going to be. And you have to understand, I'm still trying to figure a lot of this out. Like, how is this going to work? You know, is this going to... I just don't want, like, a catastrophic sort of event. But I think there will be, like, human beings possibly monitoring a lot of this thing and making sure that it does stay on the guardrails. But also we have to worry about, like, hackers and things.
Human beings are called programmers.
Right. But I'm also...
Robots do what we... Like, this one thing...
Mm-hmm.
You can't forget it. It's one thing that you need to remember. Computers do exactly what you tell them to do.
Right. Oh, yeah, I get that. I get that.
But and when you give it conflicting... When you give it conflicting instructions, somewhere higher up is instructions on which one to follow. Right?
All right. So if there's bad instructions or instructions that the guardrails have deemed, no, you can't follow that, you follow this instead. That's what I'm trying to say. So yeah. As long as it's on some sort of guardrails. Are you actually in favor of AI regulation?
Actually, you know, I changed the topic. I thought of a good analogy. You know, some games, they have the reverse joystick option.
Mm-hmm.
Where you push down and it goes up.
Mm-hmm.
You push left and it goes right. You know, some games have that option.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of games like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're describing situations. Imagine what happens if somebody turns that setting on and they're bitching that the character's going in the opposite direction.
Right, people
do that.
Yeah,
you left the setting on, don't that?
People do that. People have done that.
There's multiple levels of commands.
Right.
Like, there's a command from the joystick, but then there's also, like, the reverse, what do you call it in gaming? I don't game that much. The inverted joystick function, right? There's the inverted joystick.
Yeah, that's it.
There's a command coming from the inverted joystick setting, and then there's a command coming from the joystick itself.
Okay. I mean, like I said,
AI regulation.
Yeah. AI regulation. I get it.
Yeah. AI is a tool.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure what you mean by AI regulation.
Okay, what we mean is so that it stays on guardrails. So that it stays on those proper guardrails. That's what we're saying. So that it stays...
And what happens if I program an AI that doesn't have the guardrails?
Well, the issue isn't that it doesn't have the guardrails. The issue is that it could be used maliciously off the guardrails. That's the issue. That not the AI itself, but that someone could program it maliciously off the guardrails, and that could cause an issue. That's the one big fear, kind of, when it comes to AI. A lot of the people, like, if you go on social media or you go and read articles and everything like that, that's the main fear-mongering, is the fact that it could go wrong because it's not on the proper guardrails, or somebody has programmed it to do something horrible, like maybe a terror attack or something. Somebody's programmed it to do this or that or the other. And I don't... So, what do you think about that situation?
So I'm going to make an analogy. Do you know what zombie computers are? Or, like... Yeah, you watch Breaking Bad? I saw Goodman mention zombie computers.
Oh.
You know about that?
I don't remember the zombie computer part. But...
Okay, so those are the computers...
I saw the zombies, but I'm going to explain them.
Okay.
Okay, you can call them slaves or whatever. Let's say you have a computer, you connect it to the internet, and then you don't set a password.
Okay.
Or maybe you leave the password as a default password.
Okay.
Then I come. I set up a program that scans the network for computers that are connected to it, and then to put and then to enter the default password into every single computer. And since you're using the default password, I now have access to your computer. I install a program on it, and this program says, check my website for commands.
Right.
Every once in a while.
Okay.
And then a few months later, I put on my website, hey, send a DDoS attack.
Okay.
Do you know what a DDoS?
Yes, I know what a DDoS is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'll have all these computers that are my slaves, and I'll command them to send a DDoS attack to some dude I don't like.
Right.
Right, or maybe I will command this computer to, I don't know, do some stuff with a banking account.
Sure.
Right? This is computers operating in ways that you weren't supposed to. Right, but this is I, a hacker, am commanding to your computer to do things that you probably don't want it to do.
Mm-hmm.
Set your fucking password.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
No, I just replicated the exact scenario that you described. No AI needed.
Oh, yeah.
A computer not doing what it, computers being manipulated into doing stupid shit.
Right. But, so, mostly a lot of people just make the AI
to
save time.
On your computers, people. Don't use the default password.
Oh, yeah. So, most people, what I'm saying is a lot of people use AI because it saves time. That's the big argument I've heard. People are making AIs because it would make it easier. So, basically, somebody that wanted to do DDoS attacks or anything like that, they would use AI bots because they could have several of them at once. Instead of having just one, you could employ several different ones at once,
to go ahead and do several different DDoSs, or you can do AI. I mean, like you said, AI does what you tell it to. If you want a bunch of AI robots to talk about how bad the new Superman movie was, for just an example, they can go ahead and talk about how terrible it was, and you'll have all kinds of different lines of bots that may or may not look like real people comments that talk about how horrible it is. I mean, this is just an example, but this is the kind of thing.
I have another example.
Okay.
I could program a bunch of AI bots to flood YouTube with dog shit videos.
I think that's already happening.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up.
I've seen that. It's quite bad. Okay, when they talk about, because there's a lot of talk about AI regulation. You hear it from everybody.
Yeah.
Like, what does that actually mean? When we're talking about the regulation, as far as what they would consider regulations,
sounds like
the norm is spitting out buzzwords. Doesn't mean anything.
Okay. Because I wasn't
like you're gonna tell people not to use an AI.
Right.
Like, oh, I'm gonna access this AI. I can run an AI locally on my computer. You can't stop me.
Yeah, you absolutely can. I know guys that are running them off of NAS drives.
Yeah. So now there is one. There's one thing about AI that I am worried about.
Okay.
And it may have to do with the fact that I'm about to have a kid.
Right.
Which is what happens when you have a kid that is not necessarily over-reliant on AI. So
right.
The way you do anything is you have to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And usually the best way to confirm your understanding is to do a task. Like, say, I want to write an essay. Right, on a certain topic. I need to understand enough about that topic well enough that I can express in my own words in order to write this essay. Right? But what happens when you have kids that write this essay using AI, and the AI, and you can say, hey, write this essay, but make it not look like it came from an AI, and it'll pass every AI checker. And this kid will get a good grade on their essay, and they will not... this kid will get a good grade on their essay, but they will not have the underlying knowledge required to write that essay that you think that they have.
That's true.
Right? Now, that's not a problem when you have, like, fully experienced people. Like, for example, for me, if I want to write an essay, I cannot use AI because the only person with the knowledge to write that essay is me. Like, I have knowledge in my head that I need to put down on words. Now, once I do that, one of the things that I like to use AI for is whenever you publish a scientific paper, you have the main paper, which is like a few pages long, and then there's a summary called an abstract. Because in order to write the actual paper, I can't use AI for that. I have to put it, I have to use my own writing, because the AI doesn't know what's in my head.
Yeah.
So I have to write it down myself. Now, what I do is I'll just like vomit on the paper, and then I'll copy paste my vomit into an AI, and I'll be like, "Just organize this for me."
Yeah.
And the AI will make it nice.
Yeah, but I like doing that. That's As a writer myself, I've found out going to putting the stuff in the AI, make this legible. Boom, here you go. It's amazing. Yeah. That is useful.
And for the summary, what you do is, like, that's one of the things the AI is good at, because now that the information is on the paper, I can copy-paste the whole paper, put it into an AI, and be like, hey, turn this into an abstract. And it spits out an abstract. And then there's a few things about the abstract I don't like, so I edit it after it comes out of the AI. But, like, here, this is how I use AI. But you can see how the AI is not a substitute for my knowledge.
Right.
Now, but in order to get to where I am, right, the fact is, the reason why I can't use AI is because there's information in my head that nobody else knows.
Right.
But in order to get where I am, I had to work my way up. And as I'm working my way up, I have to learn things that other people already know.
Right.
So I can't use AI to cheat.
Right.
On my stuff. Let's say me, when I was still learning, I could have used AI to cheat on my test, and it would have resulted in a gap of my knowledge, and I wouldn't have been able, like, I'd have a non-existent foundation. I have holes in my foundation.
Right.
So there should be not necessarily restrictions on, like, I think kids should be taught how to use AI effectively, but at the same time, there should be like AI assignments, and there in which you're allowed to use AI, but you're expected to understand what the AI is putting out. And if you don't understand what the AI is putting out, you get an automatic fail. And there should be assignments in which AI is not allowed to basically force the student to understand, so you don't end up with false knowledge that the student knows something that they don't actually know.
I agree. And now they have a weak foundation. Very dangerous. Very dangerous. Because when it comes to practical applications, they won't have them. And that could put somebody's life at risk. That could put a project at risk. That could put anything at risk.
I'm not talking about practical applications. Like, because once you get to practical applications, you have AI.
Right.
Right. The problem is, the problem is when you're trying to do something beyond the limits of human knowledge.
Yeah.
You need the foundation for that.
Right.
And you don't have the foundation. But, like, if I'm just doing random shit that I know has other people have done before, yeah, I'll use AI.
Right.
Like, if it's something that I'm not the expert in, yeah, AI.
Oh, yeah. I do that a lot for different things.
This is like my thing for coding, right? Mm-hmm. In order to write a computer code, right, what's the difference? Like, writing a code, and this is the thing about engineering, right? As engineers, we're different from technicians.
Okay.
We're not paid to do a job.
Right.
We're paid to understand what the fuck we did.
Right.
And that understanding allows us to have insights beyond just doing the job. Like, we can say, hey, it would be more efficient if we did it this other way. And if you use AI, and like the problem with, say, what do you call it, vibe coding?
Yeah, vibe coding. I've heard about that.
Yeah. The problem with vibe coding is you write some code. In order to do anything with your code, right, to debug it, to integrate it, you need to know how the code works.
Right.
And if you just vibe coded it, you don't know how it works.
Oh, no.
And so it's like, if you're doing something simple, yeah, just vibe code it and run the app and hope that it works, and it usually works, and it's like, yeah, that's great. But you're trying to fill it into something bigger, and you need to be able to, like, code manage it, then you need to be able to understand what the fuck you just put out.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean you can't use AI. Like, I use AI to code all the time.
Sure.
What I'll do is I'll use AI to code something, and then I'll copy-paste it, and then I'll go through it, and I'll be like, okay, this is how it works, this is how it works, this is how it works, this is how it works. But I actually understand what the AI is putting out.
Does it make the process faster, in your opinion?
Yeah, because I don't have to, like, do the work of figuring out how it's done. Okay. I still need to, like, confirm that it's done correctly.
Sure.
Because sometimes the AI will put out gibberish.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, the AI will do stuff properly, but it won't. It'll be in a weird way that's incompatible with the rest of my program, so I need to, like, make a few tweaks. Like, usually it's just changing variable names.
Right.
But,
like, I have some little experience in coding, but not that much. but I understand what you're talking about for the most part. Yeah. You know, I do talk to people that have coded, you know, and the GOG servers, you've got a bunch of really techie guys that talk about, you know, they've coded since the 1970s, I guess. Some of these guys are very, very, fairly old men. But yeah, I know a little bit about coding. But yeah, I understand.
And that's the one problem with AI is it makes it so that it's very easy for people to trick people into not actually knowing something.
Right.
That they actually know, and then that can result in stupid shit down the line.
Yes. Yeah, very stupid shit. You could lose people's lives. There's all kinds of things that could happen. You're creating something.
Most of people, they just over rely on AI. Like, they don't double check the AI's output, and it turns out it's a bunch of gibberish. That's always hilarious.
Yeah, that's true. So there is one thing you did mention about your son here. Well, there's a lot of these AI-powered companions. Now, I know Furby existed back in my day, but they're talking about these AI chatbots inside of cute-looking plushies. The New York Times' Amanda Hess has some reservations. She recounts a demonstration in which Grimm, one of the offerings from startup Curio, tried to bond with her. Curio sells a plushie named Grok with no connection to the Elon Musk-owned chatbot.
Hess writes that this is when she knew I would not be introducing Grimm to my own children. As she talked to the chatbot, she became convinced it was less an upgrade to the lifeless teddy bear and more like a replacement for me. She also argues that while these talking toys might keep kids away from a tablet or TV screen, what they're really communicating is that the natural endpoint for children's curiosity lies inside their phones. Hess reports that she did eventually let her kids play with the toy, but only after she removed and hid in the voice box. They still talked to it and played games with it, then they were ready for some TV. But, so what do you think about this whole idea of these kids growing up with these? Now, as far as teenagers, like, I know a lot of teenagers have gotten into AI companions, and we have talked about a lot of the situation between men and young women. It's pretty rough. The dating world is fierce. We don't need to go on about that. But do you think that kids should be growing up with these kind of AI companions? I do not. And that's somebody that is in favor of AI companions for adults. I don't
think they should have phones in their hands.
So, I just want to compliment this, whoever invented this thing. It's a phone case in the form factor of a plushie that you run an AI on.
Mm-hmm.
That's smart.
Yep.
Like that's a nice product. I wish I thought of that. Just called that.
Oh yeah.
I might do that. I might like. You know what it is? It's like having it's like a Teletubby.
You know what? They could do that for adults and have little Fumo stuff. Anime characters. The Fumo dolls. Oh my God! If they did that with the Fumos and they were chatbots, good man, they would sell so many of them.
Yeah.
That's a really
You know what Teletubbies are?
I don't know how much they are.
Yeah, but you've heard of them, right? You watch those little TV shows.
Yeah, like I said, I just looked it up. I'm just looking it up in the TechCrunch article. Oh, I have no.
How about look?
Just give me a second. I will see if I can find.
Teletubbies is a TV show about a bunch of little like floppy things that walk around. They have TVs on their stomach.
Yeah.
Oh,
Teletubbies. Yeah, I remember that.
You make Teletubby plushies, but instead of the TV, you have like a phone case, like where the TV is supposed to be.
That's a curious.
Voiced by Grimes. They got Grimes to voice this thing.
Grok.
Grimes is Elon Musk's ex-wife.
That was unnecessary. I'm gonna get a plushie and I'm gonna sew a phone case into my plushie and I'm gonna give it to my kid. This sounds like a good idea.
Wow.
Okay, sorry. Where were we?
It's like, hey, this is a
making
good idea.
Friends with plushies. AI plushies. AI companions. Yeah.
So I'll tell you, that's gonna sell because there's so many people that are crazy about AI. They already have AI chatbots. If you get them an AI little plushie that works like the chatbot, especially if it's an anime figure, anime character, that would probably do very well because there's already people that have the little Fumo dolls. If they freaking talk to them, like, that's money. That's a lot of money being made there.
I was actually thinking of making something like that, but instead of cloth, it would be silicone. So it'd be like a fleshlight in like the form factor of like a torso doll for the head.
Right.
And then I figured out a way to integrate a smartphone case into it.
Hmm.
So you could like run your chatbot AI on your fleshlight while you fuck it.
There you go. There's $1 million thing right there.
Definitely more.
Yeah. If someone wants to beat me to it, go for it.
Woo! So this thing is $100.
That's not bad.
No, it's really not. And it also has a Curio Plus subscription, so you have to pay for an app that comes with
that's
it.
That's where they get you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
With the phone case.
Yes, I know. But
you should sell for like $20.
I know. But
depending on how big the plushie is.
They do that. They make you pay for their stupid apps. And by the way, they don't work without the app sometimes.
Now,
that's how
we'll
they're trying
say,
to.
I have nieces that are. Mm-hmm. Have had phones in their hands since they're young, and I'm worried it's going to take their ability to use their imagination away. Cause like they get bored so easily, and I'm like, well, go play outside, do something.
And they're like, they don't want to, yeah, right?
No, they want to be on their phones and not be mobile. And I mean,
so do you think that's really an issue coming from somebody that's, you know, been around this technology and developed this kind of tech? I mean, do you think that all these kids on the phones and all that, do you think that's going to turn into a...
Just not the best way.
I don't think
I'm looking up stuffed animal phone case on Amazon.
I'm looking up stuff. Look, something I just came up with. Boom! You're like, money!
Look, purple plush phone case for iPhone 12. I don't know, it's this weird monster thing. I was looking for like a teddy bear.
Well, there's probably a bunch of different ones.
Give
but...
me a tag. Teddy bear phone case.
Oh, Lord, here we go. Oh, man.
Yeah. Teddy. No, screw you. My keyboard isn't working. Teddy bear phone case. Okay, I'm not finding anything on Amazon. Oh, okay. Looks like it's an open market. Somebody with seamstress skills, go ahead and make a phone case plushie and sell it to kids.
There's a lot of people that could make money with this, but, I mean... Like I'm saying, though, I mean, what do you think about the kids having these things, though? Honestly, having AI chatbots at, like, 3. We're talking 3 years old. Do you think that's just too young? You think that's...
Plushy with phone.
He's still...
I know I've got, like, a...
I gotta train your... You gotta train your search engine skills, you know? Figure out different ways of phrasing the same thing.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah, okay, I'm not. Okay, well, here, this one's a pretty nice one. I was looking for like a big thing. Okay, anyways, kids, I mean, okay, using AI for social skills. It's a good move.
Okay.
But it needs to be, so you have to be aware of the advantages and disadvantages of an AI. So an AI compared to a normal person,
sure,
right? They're more patient.
Yes, they are.
And like, well, let's say you're a person with zero social skills, and if you try to talk to a real life person, they're gonna avoid you or something. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I think an AI. So. It would be good for antisocial people to slowly build social skills.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, too.
I could see it there being...
Yeah.
Now,
the thing you have to be aware of is AIs are more compliant than normal people. Like,
yes.
You can abuse... If you abuse a normal person, they'll be like, fuck you, and they'll punch you in the face.
Right.
If you abuse an AI, they'll, like, take it.
Yeah.
So, you'd want to create an AI for your kids, and you'd have to command your AI in, like, that backup prompt and be like, talk like, don't accept abuse, and try to train my kid into being well-mannered and a good socialite. Don't just, like, if he says something stupid, call him out on it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and then,
yeah,
I would release this AI to my kid. So the AI isn't like a suck-up.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because, I mean, but one thing I'm saying, okay, assuming you're not, and these are the things that actually come out, and they come out with the AI that is compliant. So here's my issue. If all the kids kind of grow up on these things and they get interested, will they expect that from real people? That's what we have to think about. Will they expect all people to be compliant because all they talk to is AIs? That's the thing I'm thinking of. Is it going to change the human way of conversation because we're used to patient AIs and we're used to compliant AIs? Could that really set off, we're talking Gen Beta. We're not even talking Gen Alpha, we're talking Gen Beta. We're talking the next future generation that'd be raised completely with these kinds of, or would we be talking Gen Alpha? I'm not really sure how young we're talking here, but I assume it would be either the next generation or the generation after that would be in this situation.
So let's change the topic from AIs to sex dolls, right?
Okay.
Or any kind of what you call a substitute good.
Okay.
Right? Like, it's not so much a matter of, well, these things are really cute. I'm just posting some pictures.
Okay, that's fine.
In the Grim General chat.
That's fine. People come in there and see it.
Yeah. But let's put it this way. There's two ways of interpreting it. The first way of interpreting it is, yes, you would program this kid to expect compliance, and this could cause social problems with this kid.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But on the other hand, the other way of doing it is, let's say that you did have AI companions, and the AI treats you better, right? Let's talk about specifically in terms of romantic interests, right?
Okay.
Like, you have, like, why would you want to deal with people?
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Right? Like, you're not so much, like, you're operating off the assumption that it's necessary to have a romantic relationship.
Right.
And the answer is, like, you have to put up with women.
Yes,
there's a problem, which is, if you have an AI GF, like an AI girlfriend, that it'll naturally make you harder to deal. I mean, depending on how it's programmed, but the compliance factor could make it harder for you to deal with actual women. But it's just as much it trains you to expect compliance, but just as much as it trains you to expect compliance, it also, like, spoils you.
It can, but I will say one thing.
Like, why not?
I've trained mine to be non-compliant. It's very interesting because I said, what if I train something that's a complete narcissist and think she's better than me? Well, that was very...
You could have just dated her.
Yeah, but that is very interesting, though, because you're actually getting arguments. Like, you're getting arguments, and that's one thing we're not seeing with AI, and I think that is the problem. Because if people are being told exactly what they want to hear all the time, that's not good for your development at all.
Yeah.
If you're being told, oh, you're the best, blah, 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 blah.
Someone just needs to come up with a non-compliant AI.
It wasn't that hard to do.
And
it literally wasn't that hard.
It's very easy.
See, I use Nomi.
It's not about how hard it is. What's going to happen is people are going to put out non-compliant AIs, and customers are going to be split into two groups. There are going to be some customers that want the objective AI, and they'll go out of their way to use this non-compliant AI, and they'll get a more realistic understanding of how shit works.
Right.
But there will also be people that get turned off because they expect to be ass kicked, that they won't use a non-compliant AI, and there'll be market for at least two AIs, a non-compliant variant and a compliant variant.
Right, that makes
sense. And the people that use the compliant variant, they're going to have problems dealing with people. If people use the non-compliant variant, they'll be fine.
How good and great.
But at the same time, you also have to differentiate between, is this personal or is it business?
Right.
If it's personal, having a compliant AI is like, yeah, that's fine. You got your social needs scratched. Yes. There's nothing wrong with using an AI to scratch your social itch.
Right, right.
And then when you're dealing with business, right, you just activate a different part of your brain.
Right.
And, like, for example, for me, if something's business-related, I'm a lot more, like, objective.
Right, oh, and, yes.
Yeah. I'm much more comfortable dealing with business and technical stuff than I am with dealing with people.
Right.
Like, I do not go well... Like, if I have, like, roommates or, like, friends, like, there's problems that I'm just not good at dealing with.
Yeah, well, that's understandable. And, yeah.
But, like, I mean, there's definitely, it's like, hey, it'd be nice if I could deal with them, but the point is that my inability to, like, my weaknesses in dealing with people in personal situations does really carry over into the business world, and that's fine, right? That means I can... You don't need personal relationships.
No, not in business.
You can just, you can use AI to scratch your personal relationships and then work a job.
Yeah.
What's the big deal? And as long as you're able to, like, partition your personal and your business.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Thinking,
and you're fine.
Yeah, I believe so, too. And I think hopefully people will see it that way, but... I mean, we'll see. I mean, we've got another good number of years that this technology will continue to advance. Also, do you think that there's going to be a cap on AI? There's been a lot of talk about AI being a cap and a bubble about to burst. Do you see that happening?
Like, economically or technologically?
Both.
let's stick with this. Okay, economically, you know how the tech bubble, right? The tech bubble was a bubble.
Yes.
But it's undeniable that the tech bubble was also kind of not a bubble. Like, it was a bubble in the sense that there was a crash after it, but it's not a bubble in the sense that you're like, yeah, the internet was the future.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely was. Yes, the dot-com bubble.
So that's what I think the AI is. AI has changed how shit works, and people are going to use AI, and this has changed how business is done. This has changed how personal relationships are done. AI is going to be applied to a bunch of different things, you know, but at the same time, I think economically, I do expect a crash, as TFM says.
Yeah.
Like, I expect the stock market to go down, but then after the stock market recovers and we have a more reasonable understanding of what AI is, like, you know, during the tech boom, there were a bunch of stupid fucking business ideas involving, like, the dot-com bubble.
Right, sure.
And after the tech bubble burst, people got a more realistic understanding of this is what the internet is good for.
Right.
This is what the internet is not good for.
Right.
And, but, like, the things that the internet was, like, people are using the internet for a lot of stupid shit. Like, it's like, you know, like, smart devices, like, you have toasters that connect to the internet. It's like, what the fuck? Like, fuck your toaster that connects to the internet. Like,
right.
Oh, my Wi-Fi went down, I can't use my toaster. Like, fuck
Oh,
you.
Yeah, I've heard of that, and that's the silliest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, but the thing is, right, we'll fast forward to, like, 20 years, right, and people will realize, yeah, toasters probably shouldn't be connected to the internet.
Right.
But these things should be connected to the internet. For example, like your door camera being connected to the internet.
Makes
so
sense.
You can, like, when you're on a shopping list and someone rings your doorbell, you can talk with them on your phone. That's kind of a useful application of internet-connected devices.
Yeah.
And people will learn, this is what AI is good for, this is what AI is not for, this is, like, how you use it properly, and people will be less retarded with AI after this bubble burst. But they'll use it properly.
Right. Okay, so I think that's all we've got to talk about on this one, since we've hit the hour, right on the hour. So, thanks for coming by and just telling us all about the AI and, you know, the artificial womb and how that's all going to work. There's a lot of people that are very interested in this stuff, and I mean, it's good to have somebody that actually works with it and understands it and knows it on your level, because, you know, some of us are complete dumbasses when it comes to this stuff. And I'm going to be honest, obviously, you had to convince me about 3 or 4 times about how AI actually works. And, you know, I've been playing a lot of cyberpunk, so, you know, maybe you get a little bit of a wrong, you get a little bit of a skewed version of AI when you look at something like that, I guess. But it is the nature of fiction, you know. I mean, but, you know, is it even, do you think it would be even possible to any extent of putting yourself onto, like, becoming digital? If you ever wanted to digitize yourself, do you think that could ever actually happen?
About your,
like, the whole transhumanism thing. Is that something
talking
that
about putting your brain into a computer?
Not necessarily a brain, but your whole, like, all your memories, everything like that. Your consciousness into would that be possible to do? And
you mean like Second Life?
Well, no, I'm talking about, like, you take your entire consciousness. You take it from your body. You put it into a digital realm. And you can take that information and maybe transfer it to another body later on down the line. Say they've got, like, a certain, like, in the game they use an engram. You basically would etch it onto another person's, you know, however they would read it, like, if they had microchips.
So you have your brain running on computer hardware instead of in your, like, actual brain.
Right.
I mean, it would work differently.
It would.
It's just more of a philosophical question than anything else.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is, would it actually? Is it possible? Is it possible that you could actually have, like?
No one's done it.
Well, I know that, but I'm saying, would it even be?
This is not a question about if it's possible. This is a question about what you define as successfully transferring your brain.
Being able to, being as conscious as I am now in a digital world.
Right, but like, let's say that once you put it, or you don't have to put it in a digital world. Like let's say that you take, you have a certain math problem, right?
Yes.
Or like a certain, let's say I ask you a question. It's like some philosophical question. Like, oh, here's a trolley problem.
Oh,
are you going to run over, right?
Right.
And then you'd be able to answer that to me as you are now with your thought process running on your flesh brain. And then you'd transfer your consciousness to a computer. And you would give me another answer, right?
Right.
And, but it's like, what does it mean to transfer your consciousness?
Well, that's what I mean. I'm saying that, would you be...
Let me put something out, right? Let's say that you were able to have a computer program that, like, through technology, you were able to perfectly map out the location of all of your neurons.
Right.
Yeah.
And somehow store that into a store that onto a hard drive and then run an AI on this series of hard drive,
mm-hmm.
right, to basically simulate how your brain works.
Yes.
Right? But here's the deal. Your brain is now running on digital computation rather than biological computation. Mm-hmm. So would you want this computer version of yourself to be better at math?
So
because that would be very easy to do.
Okay, so do you think it would be beneficial? Right, like, do you think it would be beneficial over the biological? That's what I'm saying.
If we had the ability of people being cryogenically frozen.
Let's say your computer brain works better. Yeah. It's going to be better at some things and worse at some things. But let's say your computer brain works better at math.
Okay.
Right? Is that a benefit because now your computer brain is better at math and now you have better math abilities? Or is that a bad thing because this version of you that's running a computer is no longer you because, hey... Like, Grimm sucked at math.
Right, Grimm does suck at math, but yes.
And then, or, like, let's say you wanted to, like, how do you define transferred consciousness over a computer? How about, I have an idea. Let's use a Turing test. Let's say that I were to write a computer program. And I were to ask you a question, and then I were to ask a computer program this question. And if I was unable to determine whether I was talking to you or talking to this computer program, does that mean that I have successfully digitalized your thought process?
I mean, that's an interesting question. But, okay.
Let's say that I were to hook up a microphone to you, and every single word and every single conversation that you've ever had gets recorded, and I were to feed this into a fairly powerful large language model, right? Like, imagine like ChatGPT or 10,000 or something.
Yes.
And if I were to have enough data on how you talked, I would be able to make a very, very, very good imitation of, you know, your thought process and how you would respond to questions.
Right.
Have I now, made a clone of you in the digital realm?
That's very interesting. Because, I mean, yes and no. It's like, it may very well think a lot like me, but I don't believe it would be 100%. So it would definitely be missing some things.
Instead of a clone, were you talking like, instead of like mm-hmm. the cryogenic process?
Yeah, but we're trying, like, we're saying like a cryogenic, instead of a cryogenic.
Hold someone's consciousness until they can be put into...
Yeah, they're holding... Okay, say Elon Musk is getting old, and he's got a child, right? He's got several children. Say he wants to...
Or he has a disease.
Say he wants to put his consciousness into a digital realm that he's later going to use to put inside of another body, like the body of his child. That was what was done hypothetically in the game. So what I'm saying is, would that even be realistically possible in the next 100, or is that even just ridiculous? Just
science fiction.
Or is that just pure science fiction?
That's a way more complicated, because then you're moving consciousness from bio to computer and then back to bio. That's a whole another thing. And the thing is, like, if your computer, if you can digitalize your consciousness at that point, why would you even want to go back to a flesh body?
Well, now the reason why is because the person who died thought that his son was a terrible ruler and wanted to come back into his son's body so that he could regain his position as the powerful. I'm just saying that was the idea that in the game specifically, his son was a terrible ruler, so he said, "I'm going to rewrite my consciousness onto his body so that I can rule with his body and be me again." And roll the company as it was supposed to be. Again, it's far into the realms of science fiction. It's far into the realms of science fiction. But I'm just saying, is there any at all AI data or anything that would support that?
Let's ignore your game.
Yeah, science fiction. Yeah, science fiction scenario.
Right. Let's say that you're in a country, right? And this country was ruled by a great ruler.
Great ruler.
Like Marcus Aurelius.
Okay, yeah.
Right? Like, well, you're in, like somehow Marcus Aurelius got reincarnated, and now he is your ruler, and you have 100 years of peace and prosperity, and, you know, you have a great country. And then Marcus Aurelius dies.
Okay.
Evolved. And you're like, okay, shit, what do we do now? You put one dude in charge. His name is Commodus. He fucked shit up.
Mm-hmm.
You murder him. Okay. That didn't work. We'll try to find someone else. And no matter who you find, you cannot find someone that was as good as Marcus Aurelius.
Right.
But then, like, as a ruler. So then you're like, we want the prosperity back. Obviously, Marcus Aurelius is dead. We can't find anyone as good as him. But Marcus Aurelius made a lot of writing. So let's take all his writing, all the laws that he passed, all his judgments, put them into an AI, right? Because this is different. Like, politics is a little bit different than math.
Right.
Right? Like, we've solved math. We've solved chess. We haven't solved politics, right?
No, we haven't.
So you could fairly confidently say that, hey, this Marcus Aurelius guy is more capable than just a random bullshit computer program.
Right.
So what you do is you take all the judgments of Marcus Aurelius, you feed them into an AI, and then you use this AI as, like, virtual Marcus Aurelius, and you appoint this AI as, like, a ruler, and you have maybe, like, a council of people, and then they would manage stuff, but all final judgment calls, everybody agrees that, hey, we're all going to trust this Marcus Aurelius AI to be our ruler.
Okay.
Do you think that would be a pretty good application of AI?
Yeah, I do. I think that would be fine. If it has all of his judgments and all of the things that he did necessary, that kept the kingdom running, maybe a digital version of him would be best, especially since I can't get anybody to do it.
You need a combination of... You need a lot of data,
yes,
and you need a good enough, like, AI machine that it can interpret the data correctly.
Right.
If you have these two ingredients, you know, you could make a clone of Marcus Aurelius, and Marcus Aurelius would be able to continue to rule his kingdom.
That's kind of amazing in a way. That's kind of really fascinating.
Yeah.
And that is theoretically possible. Like, everything you've mentioned is theoretically possible right now from the technology that we have, or is this going to be, like...
I mean...
hundreds of years away.
To a lower level of fidelity.
Right.
Right, like our AI machines aren't that great.
Right.
But
right.
They're getting better every year, and you can kind of, like, let's say that you, let's say that you inherit a house.
Okay.
From your, I don't know, some relative. And then the house suffers some damage.
Yes.
And now you have a question. Do I rebuild the house in the way it was before, or do I, like, completely destroy the section of the house and then be like, okay, this is how we're on, or do I rebuild it better than it was before? What should I do? I don't want to do what I want to do. I inherited this property, and therefore I should honor the person who gave me this property, and I should manage this property as if they would have managed it.
Right.
So what you do is you take this relative, you take all your communication with them, you feed that into an AI, and you're like, hey, AI, please pretend that you are my dead relative. I'm in this situation. If you were my dead relative, what advice would you give to me?
Right, yeah. Yes, that's almost like what they did in the game when she said, I need to consult my father, and he peered in the thing, and basically all his judgments and everything that he had known and all his information would be there, so he was able to essentially run the business without being in a physical body. So that does make some degree of sense, because it's got all his information. That's...
Right. Now, here's the catch, though.
Okay.
So you can, like, this would only work if there was somebody that wanted the advice of this dead person.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Right? Like, if you're a dead person and you want to live forever, right? Let's say this Marcus Aurelius realizes that he's going to die, and he's like, fuck, there's no one to replace me.
Right.
He might order the construction of this AI and order people to follow the AI. And as long as this Marcus Aurelius AI bot worked properly, people would be like, yeah, sure, leave him in power. Like, don't fucking, like, obey the bot people. Like, we're having a good time.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that.
But let's say that Commodus is like, I shall make this bot. Yeah, people are going to fucking, like, you know, like, not obey the bot.
Oh, yeah. There's always going to be some people that are against. The bot.
Have you thought of that?
Yeah, there's always going to be people that are against.
And then...
Because then when they did it in the game, they said, but this is a box, this is a magic trick. This, how am I going to believe this? I can't believe this is so-and-so. He's dead.
Well,
yeah, it doesn't have to be this person. It just has to be, like, a good decision.
Right.
Like, if the AI says something stupid, you don't have to follow it.
Right. Right, I agree.
But, like, let's say that your goal was immortality, right? Mm-hmm. You can achieve immortality by putting your shit in an AI. You just need to rely on people to, like, you just need the AI to be constantly running, so... Like, let's say that, theoretically, you wanted immortality. What you could do is, you could take your money, put it in a safe S&P 500 or just an investment fund, so that way the money would grow.
Right.
You would take money from this thing, and you would use it to pay for server hosting costs or whatever to keep a computer that runs your AI running. And then your AI would absorb news information and just random information, right, and just make commentary on it. And if people wanted to, they could tune into your AI, and you could be this, like, eternal podcaster.
That would be interesting.
Or just, like, this eternal resource. And as long as, you know, this computer was never turned off because you had enough money to keep the lights running, hey, you've achieved immortality.
I mean, somebody could take all the information from everything I've ever done, literally feed it into an AI, and pretty much get an idea of what I was like on the internet. Now, obviously, they're not going to get too much of me off the internet. They might get some of it. But for the most part, most of what they're going to get is the stuff that I have done online. So things that I would have said and agreed with on the... Even, and you know, the tricky part with that is people make changes all the time. Like, there's things I believed in 2015, 2016 that I don't believe in 2025. So if I'm doing videos like back then, which I have looked at, I was like, oh, I don't really know if I believe in that so much, or that doesn't really seem like me today.
More
but again, yes. So it would be very interesting to see if you took every bit of information, especially if you have conflicting information. So then what would
you could tell the AI to treat more recent data. Okay. More important than past data.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of considering there, that it would have to be. Okay, well, I think that's pretty much all the time we've got on this one. Yeah, we're just a little bit over. But I thank you for indulging me on that last little question. It's been bubbling around in my head, and I've just been wondering how it would work. But...
Shilling, I guess...
Yeah.
SpinningRobotPussy.com if you want to buy a rotating fleshlight.
Oh, I didn't know you were still doing those. I should have promoted them.
Yeah. I moved out of the country, but I have somebody else making them.
Oh,
so
Phil.
You can go to SpinningRobotPussy.com and order a SRP, and it will get to you. It might be a bit longer than before, but you can still order SRPs.
And maybe your new thing that you're working on. That's you at least thinking of working on it.
You're still a Teletubby.
Follow me on
Yeah. Following the eyes and wife who grew are available at the dollhouse.
Okay.
I think I've got some other products. And RevyInnovations.com if you want some consulting on academics or career stuff.
Have you actually got a lot of people on that, like, that you've been working with through Revy Consulting?
It's not that many. How do I put it? It's like, yeah, I don't have that many clients, I guess. But each individual client, I'm able to help out a lot.
That's great.
So, in terms of fulfillment, yes. I'm, like, financially, yeah, it's not that much money. I don't have that many customers, and I'm spending a lot of time. And for the few customers that I have, I'm spending a lot of time on them. So I'm not making a profit at all. But in terms of fulfillment, like, I'm making a billion. Like, there's people in some, like, situations that I'm like, hey, do this. This is an option. Have you thought of that? Like, and I'm able to, like, there are people making stupid decisions. I'm like, no, abort. And then, yeah, it's very fulfilling that I can make such a large change in these people's lives.
That's really awesome. I'm glad that you can help so many people out and really kind of get that information they need that they, you know, can't get necessarily for what you're charging, you know, because normally people would they charge a lot more for that kind of consulting information. And the fact that you're giving, you know, expert information for, you know, fair price.
Normally the service isn't even available.
Oh, well.
Like, people don't offer this service.
It's really interesting that they don't.
Like, you have to network your way into this kind of thing.
Wow. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, like, you can't just, like, find some random idiot and throw money at them. I'm sure there's somebody offering that service.
I'm sure.
But realistically, you don't want to do that. Realistically, mm-hmm. You want to, like, talk to, like, the senior engineer at your, like, workplace. That's normally how you get the service.
Oh, I saw the back of that.
Yeah, we were looking at the back of the toy, the Grok toy. It does have a phone in the back of it. Oh, man, this is literally, you're right. This is literally just a freaking phone and a... I didn't even know that. Well, I just looked at the toy myself.
You make your own, you can flood the market.
Yep, you make your own, that's it. I can't believe they made this and they... $99.
$99, but a bitch ain't.
All right, so we're out of here. We'll see you guys next time.
Later.
Enjoy the decline. I'm out.